This is episode 671 of the AWS podcast, released on June 10th, 2024.
Welcome everyone to the AWS podcast. I'm your host for today, Jillian Ford, and this one I'm so excited for because I get to interview Simon. And I'm just sure that a lot of you are probably have always wondered, hey, how do you grow your career in the cloud? Career advice. I mean, and Simon is an OG at Amazon. And so I'm sure just his wisdom in all things, not only AWS, but also just in the tech industry in general can really help you wherever you're at in your career.
Well, hopefully. I mean, I know I'm very discombobulated because, you know, I didn't get to launch the episode or anything. I'm a passenger here, but I will preface with our conversation today that I don't know anything. Everything is just my opinion and I don't promise to be the authority on anything. All I can do is share my own experience. And I'll also preface it with the fact that if you know me, I hate talking about myself, but I will take a pass for the duration of this episode and talk about stuff. So please don't think I'm vain. I don't try not to be.
I think you're too humble. I think a lot of people are just going to learn so much from hearing your experience and just any nuggets of wisdom that you've got to really help them as they're really figuring out their journey. So maybe we should start with your journey, into the tech industry and then specifically how you got into AWS.
Sure. I was always going to get into the technology industry. I think I got an Apple II computer when I was 13 years old. And so I was one of those nerdy kids. This is back in the 80s. So it wasn't, I think 83, I got my first real computer. And so I used to write code for myself and all that sort of stuff. And then eventually I bought a printer. That was a revolution. I could print things out of the computer. And then a little later I got a 300 baud modem so I could dial out to bulletin boards. This is well before the internet age, as you can imagine. So I was always into the technology thing. And it was interesting because back in those days, it was not really still a very established career path per se. It became one over the years. And so, yeah, I went to university and studied an honors degree. So I did 3 years of normal undergraduate. Then I did an honors year around geographic information systems. And then went out into the big bad world to start working in, would have been sort of mid-90s by the time I'd taken my gap year, et cetera, and away it went. And my actual first job was in mainframes. Just as the internet boom was forming up, there was me cutting COBOL, KIX, JCL, all the modern stuff. So it was fun. But that's how I got into it.
Wow. I think what's so interesting about your story is that you've really just seen technology evolve as every single part of it. And so one question that kind of really comes to mind is like you've started learning programming yourself, COBOL, like how have you kept up with learning new technologies?
It's an interesting, I would say it was a conscious thing. It's become a conscious thing probably in the last few years, but I always just liked using new things and trying things out. I sort of wasn't sort of religiously tied to, well, it's got to be COBOL, it's got to be Java, this is the way. I was pretty happy to be flexible on what it was. I sort of unconsciously came to the realization that a software developer is a software developer. You're not a .NET developer or a COBOL developer or what have you. And each and every language and domain has strengths and weaknesses. And so the more you can learn about the different approaches, the better, because then you know what to use in certain situations. So, you know, sometimes C might be a really great approach. Sometimes a higher level language is a better thing. You know, there was a long time I was using 4GLs, which was popular at the time. And so it was, you know, graphics and generated code and other stuff. And you know, these things come and go and you can't tie yourselves to particular things. So having an open mind, but knowing the concepts is really powerful. So, you know, I think it's really nice to be able to say, well, I don't know Rust, for example, but I could pick up Rust pretty quickly because I'm guessing it has if structures and loops and some form of package management and all the other stuff. And then there's all these nuances that will make it really cool and is why people like to use it for particular use cases. So you just got to not hold on to things so tightly you can't let go of them. I mean, I loved coding in COBOL. I'm not fashionable. I really enjoyed it. It was really good. It did the job really, really well. It had lots of downsides as well, but there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with it and robust as anything. And so I could have spent my life probably doing that if I wanted to, but yeah, things move on and different things come and go. I mean, I'm old enough now that I've seen the different fashions. So, you know, I've gone through a client server was the big thing. That was probably the first transition. I saw, oh my God, client servers, you know, no dumb clients. It's all fat client. That's what we're going to do. And so everyone moved to that. And then suddenly it was like, oh, there's this internet thing. So now it's all rendering web-based thin client. And then it became single page applications. And then it's the phones. And, you know, it's just going to change. And so I think you need to almost as a technology person just go, it's going to change. I don't have to buy into everything, but I need to be open to new things and I should enjoy the new things. You know, it's fun. If it's not fun, maybe find something else to do.
Yeah, I love that approach that you've had to really learning new technologies, but still having that base that you've learned over time that can help you to be able to understand, okay, how does this really work? And really, what is this new technology and how does this really improve the old way of being able to do things?
Or does it even? I mean, there's a lot of technologies that I didn't buy into because in my opinion, again, it's just my opinion, you get to have your own opinion, they weren't useful. They didn't add anything. So it's like, I'm not paying attention to this. You know, you can't pay attention to everything. So for me, anyone who knows me well knows that, you know, blockchain is the thing for me that I can't do it. I'm not interested.
Thank you. I'm the same.
And let me tell you, I was deeply unpopular with that opinion for a long time, but I was okay with that. You know, it's like I say, you get to have your own opinion. And for me, just not, and no decrying folks for who they see value in it. That's great. You get to make your own choices. But for me, it was like, it was never something I was going to buy into, but it wasn't because I had to, you know, again, a religious hatred of blockchain. It was, I jumped into it, I used it, and it didn't do much for me. The only regret I have with blockchain, I'll share this one with you, is back in 2011 when I just joined AWS, I had lots happening at the time, as you can imagine, the fire hose at the time. And one of the things I had on my list to do was to use spot instances to mine this thing called Bitcoin that was out there because it looked like a really interesting use case. This is when Bitcoin was not in the public eye. It was worth, you know, 0.000 cents or whatever. You know, no one cared about it. And it was literally, it was on my to-do list. And it was one of those things I just deprioritized. I didn't have time to do it. So I just never bothered. And then, you know, later on when it's worth ridiculous amounts of money, like, oh, you know, one of those classic what ifs. If I'd mined some Bitcoin, but I wouldn't, you know, I think the other thing that I think is I wouldn't have kept it till it was like, you know, $20,000. I think that's, it's never going to get to that price. I would have sold it at like, you know, 5 cents or something. But you can what if yourself to death. So don't do that.
So true. Let's go back to how you really got into AWS from, like, COBOL as a in your early days.
Yeah. How the hell did you get there? There was a lot between the COBOL and the cloud bit, and I won't bore you with all that, but I've done lots of different things. I've done, as I mentioned, lots of different project styles, very heavy on architecture, large scale system design, etc. I also stepped into business consulting for a period of time, so kind of went to the dark side, which is really good because I got to learn about how all these projects get funded and how you actually propose them and, you know, where does it come from, like the non-technical stuff. At the time when the Amazon thing came up, I was actually at Cisco. I was doing data center architecture there. And I got a phone call one day. I remember it very clearly because I was in the Cisco office. I get this phone call, you know, the classic private number phone call. Okay, who's this? And it was a recruiter. And, you know, recruiters, I've had really good experiences with recruiters in my career, I have to say. But, you know, they have a mixed reputation in the industry, I think, depending on the recruiter. But this recruiter rings me and says, "G'day, you don't know me. My name's such and such. I've got a role I think you'd be really good for and really interested in." And I'm like, "Mate, you know, firstly, I work at Cisco, so, you know, I'm in a pretty good place. And also there's not many companies I'd go and work for. Like, you know, name the big companies. I'm not going there because I just didn't like the culture, didn't like the approach, whatever." And he's like, "Okay, well, it's Amazon." I'm like, "You have my attention." Because I'd already been using AWS myself for some S3 stuff. And this is back in the day when I started using it where an EC2 instance had two states, running or terminated. So you had to save all the state off. Like, it was not the easy way of doing things at the moment. But, you know, I'd been using it for a while. This is amazing. And so long story short, the role was to be the first solution architect in Australia and one of 8 in the world at the time. I think at the time I joined Amazon, there were 16,000 people who worked in all of Amazon. So that's .com, everything. Like, it was a different time. It was a startup. So yeah, so I went through this long interview process and it was fascinating and a very exciting time. And I got the job and started, you know, learning and doing all that sort of stuff. And it was the fire hose. Like, I remember that time. I was literally waking up at 5 o'clock every morning, freaking out. Like, oh my God, there's so much I've got to learn. Got to get across all this stuff. I want to do a really good job. Da 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 da. And just worked hard and did it. And, you know, one of my favorite things is I had to go across to the US to meet some folks in the US because no one in Australia. You know, in fact, I had to take my laptop. I had to go to the Mac store, buy a laptop, fly to America, give it to the IT person in America. They imaged the laptop so I could take it back and actually use it on the network because we didn't have any IT support in Australia. That was different. But the thing I did on the plane flying over to America, if you come from Australia, it's like you're talking a good 15, 16-hour flight just to get to America, then the hop to Seattle, is I read the entire S3 manual, the API guide, the user guide, I was always a big fan. I've always been a big fan of read the documentation. And so that was one of my little study things. But that's kind of how I got into it. And it's a decision. I'm not going to say, oh, I knew what the future was going to hold. It was always going to be a great decision. But what I did know is that this cloud computing thing was fundamentally better than anything in the way we'd done it before. And I wanted to be part of that. That's the thing I knew. The rest was just what was going to happen. You know?
I can totally relate. Yeah. Same thing, I think, with me and my journey. And I know there's someone who's listening here who is not in the cloud right now. And they see like, this is the really is now and it's going to continue to be the future. So for someone who is listening, who doesn't have experience in the cloud, what advice do you have for them to get their first job in the cloud?
Yeah. So one of the things that's changed a lot over the years, and like I said, I'm old now. I've been in IT for well over 30 years now. So it's been a while. In the old days, if you wanted to get experience or do something, you had to work for someone who had access to the thing you needed to get experience in. So for example, if you want to learn mainframe, well, guess what? You're working for a company that owns mainframes. It can send you on the IBM training and do like that's how you did it. That's not the world we live in anymore. If you want to get into the cloud, you simply log into your AWS and get a free account and start doing some of the courses there, start doing the exercises, dive in and actually do things. I'm a big fan of learning by doing. That's kind of my way of doing things and getting things wrong and figuring it out. But firstly, just starting to poke around and do things becomes really fascinating. And you'll get that moment. And I had this moment where I was sitting at my kitchen table with my laptop on my AWS account and I went, I have more access today on this than I've had at any big major company I'd ever worked for. And I'd worked for banks and the government, and I had more compute power on my laptop into the cloud than I'd had before. And that was a big mind shift. So I think working on things yourself and then getting involved in open source projects or kicking off your own open source project is super powerful, super powerful. Like if you want to get into something, do some work, get into something, build something, scratch an itch, build your own little project. It doesn't have to be, you know, some highfalutin, everyone's going to sign up for this type of thing. It just be, I want to do this thing. There's not a thing that does it the way I want to do it. I'm going to build my own thing. And I think for me, learning has always been, I'm going to do little projects that scratch my own itch of problems I have at the time. And that's a good thing. And that's sort of how you learn. So don't wait. Don't ask for permission. It's all out there. It's all free. It's just there. It's like, it's unbelievable. So just go do it. And if you do that, the people who you want to hire you are going to see the passion. Because like in my role, I get to interview lots of people. I've done hundreds of interviews and seen lots of different candidates and done resume screens and all this other stuff. And the thing that leaps out to me the most is the approach people take to solving problems and how they think about that. And thinking about your career is its own problem. You know, how am I going to do my career? Like what am I bringing to the table? What skills do I represent the best? Where are my strengths? How can I showcase those strengths? So let's say really passionate about user experience and front end and you want to do that as a job. Well, you should probably be building a portfolio of those that showcase what you can do and say, hey, look, I built this thing and it uses, you know, no libraries to do that, or it's super lightweight, or look how I can do this thing for people with low vision that most people can't do. And you know, that's what gets attention of those really cool jobs. There's a lot of jobs that are just like, hey, just come and do the code thing. And that's for some people. I don't think it's for everyone. But if you're passionate about something, build your passion is probably what I'd say.
Yeah. Oh, that is such good advice. There's a couple of questions that we got from our listeners on this episode to ask you. So we've got one from Cole, and Cole wanted to know, how do you stay current with AWS technology besides, of course, hosting the AWS podcast? And I kind of also related to that, even just in general in tech now, how do you tackle being able to just learn new things that are just happening in general in the tech industry?
Yeah, it's not getting any easier, is it? There's always more stuff. I read a lot. I like to read. I love reading blogs. I always have one of those apps. I think Pocket is the one I'm using at the moment that you can save for later, reading for later. I find them really useful because there's lots of these sort of weird downtimes in your day or in your work that if you just have your lineup of articles ready to go, you can start reading them. So for example, like I travel a lot for my work and I get most of my reading done from the time I sit down in the chair in the airplane until it takes off. Now, if you think about that, if you get it, like I'm a nerd and I like to get on early because I want to have space for my bag and I want to get settled, et cetera. But also that's when I do my reading. So I get on the plane and then in the time they're loading the plane up and they're making the announcement about where the doors are and, you know, the safety thing that I could probably do myself now, I've read 5 or 6 articles minimum by that time, just about different things. In the last flight I took, because I was flying yesterday, actually, I was reading about data structures for large-scale systems. It was a really interesting paper. Then there was another one about, I think it was how to measure software productivity and the challenges of that. I just like to read. And again, you've got to kind of get to the point of saying, no matter how much I read or I investigate, I'm never going to know everything and I can't know everything. I think that's you've got to kind of let it go. And even in AWS world, like there was a beautiful time at AWS. I'll make this claim. There was a point at AWS where I knew everything about every service. It was probably about 2012, 2013. We had maybe 16, maybe 24 services. I can't remember exactly, but I knew all of those services inside out and I was proud of that. And that was a big thing for me. There's now what, nearly 300 services probably over. I haven't counted lately. I don't know all the services. Like, I don't know detail about Thinkbox deadline, for example. It's not my space. I couldn't tell you much about how Elemental works at a detailed level, but I know people who do. But I know enough about it to know that it exists. And I think for me, staying across things is just knowing they exist is often the most important thing. Because when I talk to people about solving technology problems, one of the biggest challenges I see they have is they don't know what they don't know. And it's a sign to me they have let their learning slip. And it's interesting, I can often pick when the last time they went on some training or did some training was. Like I can almost age them based upon their frame of reference. Because like, oh yeah, okay, the last time you went on training, it was for VMware, wasn't it? Yeah. Oh yeah, that was, and when was that? Yeah, that was 8 years ago. It's like, yes, things have changed since then. And so, you know, you're a function of your input. So I just try and make it part of my routine. Not to the extent that I'm just reading all the time and I'm just a SWAT constantly, but you know, just try and stay up to date. Specifically with AWS stuff, obviously when something new comes out, yeah, I'm going to read the information. I'll look at the documentation. The FAQs are really useful at Amazon, I find. I really like reading the FAQs because they tend to frame out a little bit more about how things work, but also just jumping in and doing it, using it. Update the CLI, jump in, issue some commands, test it out, give it a go. Maybe it solves a problem I have, so I'll try it, but I'll pick and choose. I won't do everything. But back to the AWS podcast, that is one of my life hacks to keep up to date with things. It creates what we call a forcing function. You know, I get to read every single update that happens in AWS. Now, it doesn't mean I remember them all or can tell you about them all, but I've certainly read them. And so at least I have a feeling of what's going on. Before we did this episode, we were doing one of the update shows. And like, you know, you and I know a lot more about TLS 1.3 introduction to a lot of services that probably weren't there before. So that's, yeah, we now know that, you know, that's good.
So true. Yeah, I'm sure all the solutions architects that are listening to this episode can totally relate to just like you're not going to know everything. But even like for those who are subject matter experts in an area, maybe they're like data scientists, for example, or DevOps is their area of expertise. There's still new patterns that keep coming up. So I love your advice there. And I'll kind of segue into the next question I have, because when I first joined AWS, it totally opened up my eyes to the amount of career paths that there are in the cloud that are very different than what most people talk about when they think about tech. Like they think you can either be a product manager or software engineer or QA. And then it's like, you go into the cloud and you're like, whoa, there's so many other options. So for the people who are new to the cloud and they're trying to figure out like what job should I get, maybe you can just like kind of help them kind of navigate what are the career paths in the cloud.
You're right. There's a bunch. I mean, you know, even if we think just from an AWS perspective and then go beyond that, you know, things like technical trainer, great career path. You know, I have people in my team who were technical trainers who are now solution architects. They've moved into that sort of zone. So, you know, you can be teaching, you can be helping people solve problems, etc. Support is a huge pathway, you know, helping people solve their day-to-day problems or becoming a technical account manager and physically visiting them and spending time and learning their business, another huge domain. Professional services, you know, going out and working on customer projects long-term, you know, spending a lot of time with the customer rather than paging in and out is really interesting. Solution architecture, obviously, is a really interesting career. I think it's unique and you get to see so many things all the time. But then just more generally in the cloud, you know, there's such a demand for people who are developers who know how to use the cloud, security specialists who know how to use the cloud, data analysts who know how to use the cloud, UX folks who know how to use the cloud. Anything you need to do, cloud brings something to the table for you. And typically it's an accelerant, the ability to go faster. So it's not like saying, you know, I would never say I'm a cloud person. Like I know a lot about the cloud. I do a lot of my work in the cloud, obviously, but I'm not a cloud person. I'm a software solutions person. You know, I'm a business solving person. That's what I do. I happen to use what's the best thing available to me at the time. And at the moment, the best thing is the cloud. So that's the thing I use. And so there's lots of pathways you can go. And it's been interesting watching, like we have people who do mid-career changes at Amazon. So they come from completely different backgrounds that will come in. And what's been interesting to me is, again, if you bring an approach and an aptitude, the training is actually not that hard to get to a level of competence where you can add a lot of value. So you could be a teacher and become an architect. It translates across. You don't have to be a maths genius to do that. There's no end to the pathways, but having the skill sets is what becomes really valuable. I think the certifications are really useful in that. Certifications are not the be-all and end-all. Let me be very clear on that. I hold 9 of them. So, you know, you think I say, oh, it's got to certify all the things. The certifications are useful and it's a way to demonstrate to someone, hey, I know some stuff. So that's another pathway as well to just build up that collection to showcase in the specialty you're working in that, hey, this is what you want to do.
I love that you just explained it as really cloud being an accelerant to, I guess, wherever it is that you really want to go in your career and calling out the ability to really reinvent yourself. I know I can totally relate to that. I was doing online advertising before, buying ads on the internet, spending all day on Excel spreadsheets. Now I probably couldn't do a pivot table because I just haven't had to use it anymore. But I know that there's also people here who are probably, maybe they're doing something and they're like, you know what, I want to, let's say they want to get into the AI revolution. That's the big one these days is now people, they're doing something that's currently in tech or maybe even it's in the cloud, but they realize, oh, wow, this Gen AI, this is changing something. And so they want to change their career. So any advice for someone who now wants to really pivot into a new area of tech and then maybe you can specifically get into AI as well?
Yeah, look, I think with anything, if there's a particular area you want to get into, you know, you got to go deep. And you got to go deep by building and learning as you build is what I would suggest. So pick a domain, pick a subject and build something around that because you're going to learn where all the rough edges are, where all the problems are. And that's really, if you think about what people pay you for as a technologist, they pay you to show them the path that's going to cause them the least problem. That's all they want. You know, help me not make the mistakes that others have made. Let's make some fresh mistakes maybe, but let's not do that. So I think, you know, the classic saying, do less than obsess. Like you really want to go deep and obsess on stuff. And so the people that I see really pushing the sort of the world of AI and Gen AI forward in this new world are the ones that aren't just talking about it, but are building stuff that people can use. It's, oh, look, now we can abstract this, or now this is, you know, this is this method to bring a whole lot of language models together to do different personas and run together. Oh, that's really interesting. And so like myself, I'll grab those and start building on those. And, oh, that's what it's interesting. That's what it does. And it's how it works. And look, I can build this thing that I know about using this technology and then show people what it does. And people are like, oh my God, it's amazing that it does that. It's like, well, you just have to build something. Just building into it is important. And I think solutions like Gen AI that are new and interesting, again, get your hands on it and use it, and you'll see very quickly where it fits. And so, for example, that's what I did with blockchain. I didn't just say, oh, I'm not a big fan of blockchain. It's like, oh, let me use this thing. I'm like, oh my, this is a lot of yak shaving to get done what I can do with a database. Not really buying into this. Whereas once I got my hands on Gen AI and started using it, I'm like, okay, I can see which value chains are affected by this. You know, if you're a software developer, oh my goodness, like I'm not the world's best software developer at all, but I know how to develop software. I would not develop software without using some sort of Gen AI assistant, be it Code Whisperer or whatever, ever again. It makes me 5 to 10 times faster because I know what I want to build and I know what the outcome should be. But typically I write code that has no error checking and is pretty crappy. But I can tell the LLM, hey, go write this beautiful thing, make sure the error checking is done, do it how I should do it, not how I actually do it. And it pumps out beautiful code that works really well. And the thing I love is if it pumps out code that I don't like or I want it to do it better, I say, well, take what you did, but iterate on it this way. And this is how I write all my programs now. I don't start with, you know, writing code. I'm writing prompts, the right code. And it's, again, changing value chain. So just by doing that, I'm like, okay, I now see why this is different. Now I can take that knowledge and translate it to completely different domains. Like, oh, let me show you how this applies. Let me show you where it doesn't work very well. Let me run into the problems, etc. It's this process of exploring, but practical exploration rather than theoretical exploration. I often tell people, and people as they get through their career tend to merge into this because we have this weird thing in technology where we push people to be administrators and managers, et cetera. And I've been one. And so I know of which I speak. And the challenge I say to people is if your main operating system is Excel and PowerPoint, then you have a problem and you need to reevaluate your choices. And I'm sure there's people listening who go, oh my goodness, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's why they're here. They want some advice from you.
Yeah.
And I think it's those analogies that you use, well, examples really of blockchain and Gen AI, those are really good examples of technologies that became new. And so there was a lot of people who were like, I don't really know what this is. How do I use it for my business or just for my own personal life? And those new technologies present new opportunities to become a subject matter expert. I know I've seen a bunch, I'm sure you have, where people who were doing something completely different, they just dove all in. And then now they're experts on it. They're specialists, for example, like on blockchain, for example, on Gen AI.
Exactly. Your ability around a topic is not based upon the fact that just this body of knowledge. It's you know how to learn. Gen AI is the thing at the moment. Absolutely. It's going to be the thing for a little while, but something else will come along. Something else always comes along. Spoiler alert. How are you conditioned to learn the next thing? Or do you make a conscious choice to say, well, this is where I'm stopping. This is it. This is what I'm not learning anymore from here on out. This is just what I'm doing.
So true. Yeah.
It's a valid approach.
Now, you're calling out the people who are Excel and PowerPoint is literally the most advanced tech that they're using. And I bet some of these people, they're probably in companies where you can relate. They're not the most advanced. They're a bit slower to adopt things that are new in technology. But let's say you've got someone who's listening, who's hungry. They want to be able to apply the latest and they see an opportunity, but they're in a company that's not really moving as fast as they are. So what advice do you have for this person to be able to either apply new technologies there, or maybe they have to explore other companies?
I've seen on multiple occasions folks within an organization who have seen a problem domain and seen that it's like almost intractable the way they're doing things and literally have gone away and spent the weekend building something on AWS to do the thing that their company said couldn't be done for less than $1 bazillion in a bazillion months. And on Monday morning, went to show their manager and said, hey, look what I built. And they're like, oh my God. And that can be a change. Now, you may not always get a good hearing. You may be, well, that's great. But well, then you know, well, probably not the company for me. You know, there's times you can change the organization and there's times you can't. And you as an individual have to make a choice of whether you fit or don't fit or want to push or don't want to push. And there's, again, no right answers for that. But it is amazing how different showing something actually working can affect people's decision making. I can't overemphasize that. Like just showing someone the reality changes the conversation completely. Because until then you're working with individual mental models and individual perceptions of the world. And yeah, you say you can do this, but I don't believe you, or I've never seen it done, or it always fails. It's not possible. Versus, hey, look, it's real. It's in front of you. You have a key decision to make. And so I think, you know, it's a classic thing of be the change you want to see in the world, you know, be the change, implement that change. And if you realize that the world you're in is not going to change because it's just not designed that way, find a place that suits you better.
I love that. All right. I've got a vulnerable question is imposter syndrome, because I feel like on the other side, we're talking about learning new things and really jumping into opportunities to learn these new things and being able to apply them. Usually on the other side of that, there's always imposter syndrome. It's that vulnerability of, I haven't done this before. Is this something that you felt before?
All the time. But it's a feature, yes. Not a bug. It's a feature, not a bug. If you're feeling imposter syndrome, then you're doing the right thing. It's the people that don't feel imposter syndrome that are dangerous, quite frankly, because they think they know everything. So there's a saying that I heard many years ago, I think is a great saying, that if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And my follow-up to that is, at Amazon, I'm never in the wrong room because I'm never the smartest person. So a simple example, you know, I can go into a room, and I have gone into a room, and there's James Hamilton, who's done all kinds of incredible things for his, like, blows my mind what a smart dude this guy is. And lovely, down-to-earth guy, but, you know, brain the size of a planet. James Hamilton is one of our vice presidents and infrastructure gurus. He has pioneered more development around our networking stack, server stack, our CPU stack, the way we build the cloud than most have contributed to. Yeah, he had a storied career back at IBM helping develop DB2 and lots of other things. Like, I can't do justice to his career, but brain the size of a planet, does amazing stuff. Another example, you know, sitting down with Werner Vogels. I get to sit with him quite regularly and chat about stuff. And it's Werner, for goodness sake. You know, he's the guy that people take photos with, et cetera. I mean, you could feel like an imposter. You go, hey, I can have a really useful conversation here and learn some stuff. I mean, we have James Gosling working at Amazon. I mean, the dude created Java. You can bump into him at the tea room. I mean, it's this sort of thing. But what's really interesting on that as well is that there's a cultural thing at Amazon that I really like, which is that the most senior person speaks last in any meeting. And the idea of that is in traditional world, if the most senior person speaks first, who's going to disagree? Everyone's going, oh, yeah, boss, you're right. Or, yeah, guru, you know what you I'm not going to disagree with Werner. He knows everything, you know. But smart leaders know that they don't know everything, and it's much better to be able to pick and choose all the best ideas before they come to you. Imposter syndrome is a thing, but don't let it overwhelm you. Everyone's making shit up as they go. People don't know what's going on. Everyone's trying to figure stuff out. They all make mistakes. If you talk to someone who says they never made a mistake, stop talking to that person because they're a liar.
Total liar.
Or they're just not doing anything interesting is the other thing. So, you know, like I say, it's a feature, not a bug, but don't obsess over it either. Don't go, oh my goodness, I'm going to get caught out and they're going to sack me, et cetera. You know, don't feel that way. Just do good stuff, meet with good people, mix with people. If you're feeling a bit funny about stuff, talk to folks you know and say, hey, you know, here's how I'm feeling. Actually, one quick story I want to share because I think it is important is I worked with someone who, and got the chance to work with them again, who's fantastic, great professional, unbelievable professional. And they resigned and went to another company for a few years and then came back to Amazon. And when they resigned, I said, why are you resigning? I said, oh, I'm just imposter syndrome. I'm just not good enough, da, 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 da. Was totally not true, but that's how this person felt. And I said, why do you feel that way? They told me who they were comparing themselves against. And I'm like, why are you comparing yourself against those people? Those people have got 15 years more experience than you do. They've been doing this longer. They're not better than you. They've just been doing it longer. You know, you're not making a fair comparison. So I think when you compare yourself against others, don't do it unfairly. Like, you know, if you're 5 years into IT and you're saying, well, you know, can I do the things that Simon does? Well, Simon only does the things he does because he's been doing it for 30 plus years. Come and talk to me then we'll talk about it. You'll probably be doing things way better than I could ever do. You know, you've got to be fair. But I see people like creating these unrealistic expectations, and that's what makes imposter syndrome really bad. The only way to solve imposter syndrome is to firstly accept, like I say, it's a feature, not a bug, and use it to fuel your desire to learn interesting things and talk to interesting people and talk to other people about what they do. I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone at Amazon who doesn't feel imposter syndrome. Like every single person.
Me too. Yeah.
No matter what level, like,
yes,
vice presidents, you know what? Yeah. Let me tell you, when people sit down with Jeff Bezos, they feel imposter syndrome.
Yes. I love that it's a feature, not a bug. I think you summed it up just so well. So a lot of things I would say, huge takeaways really, is just throwing yourself into, or diving deep, as we would say, into anything that you really want to learn about. Diving yourself into the cloud, or maybe there's a certain topic within the cloud that you're really interested in, and getting hands-on with it. And imposter syndrome is normal. Any parting advice to our listeners? Maybe we can kind of break it out, because we've got listeners who are at different levels. So we've got people who are new to AWS, and you know, we've got the people who they've been doing AWS for a while and they're asking themselves, what's next for me? So let's start with the person who's new to the cloud.
I'm going to apply, I'm going to be cheeky, and I'm going to apply the same advice to everyone. And it's the advice that I've given over 600 times. Because what do I say at the end of every podcast? I say, keep on building. That's the advice. That's the secret. You got to keep on building. Because every time you're building, no matter where you are in your career, super beginner, super advanced, in the middle, changing careers, what have you, build stuff for yourself, for others, for your community, whatever it is. That is the catalyst to learning, to finding passion, to finding what you don't like. Learning what you don't like is just as important as learning what you like. Probably more important even.
So true, yes.
Just be building something. You got to be always be building something or have something on your mind that you're working towards that you're trying to solve for. That I think is what creates that spark or that inspiration and drives the learning and drives the development of your career because you're always building something interesting and better. Like I say, I don't just say it, I do it as well. Like I'm building stuff all the time. Like, you know, I was coding something just before we got on the call and it was going terribly. And that's okay because I'm learning stuff. So yeah, keep on building. It's not just a saying.
That is the perfect way to end things. There's the cheat codes from Simon is that there are no cheat codes. You just got to keep learning and building and putting the work in. Simon, I'm so grateful that you just like gave so many people who are listening just all this advice. We're vulnerable. Really bad imposter syndrome is just a feature, not a bug. So thank you so much for being here on a maybe unfamiliar territory as being the person interviewed on the AWS podcast.
My pleasure. And thanks for doing a great job making it easy for me, Jillian.